The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Welcome to the podcast on Tuesday, the 18th of June, 2019. On the podcast today, I have James Draper, Chief Executive Officer of Bidstack, BIDS. And James talks about what happened at E3, one of the gaming industry's most high-profile events. Also on the podcast, David Signatera, Executive Chairman of Live Company Group, LVCG. And David discusses their agreement to lease the group's Brick Live Animal Paradise touring show in Japan. I also have on the podcast Gil Holzman, President and CEO of Eco Atlantic Oil and Gas, ECO. And Gil talks about the mobilization of the Stena Forth drill ship, which is now en route to its highly prospective assets in Guyana. Do me a favor. Nothing in life is free, apart from the Vox Markets app. Now, if you get value from that free bit of, you know, app, kit, tech, then please give us go to the App Store and give us a nice rating and review, and that would be much appreciated. Like this one here, from Chartsworth, 5 stars. Switch to Vox Markets app, as I can now get all relevant RNSs in one place each day. Graphs are great from the watchlist, together with easy access to the regular podcast. Great, comprehensive app. If you can do that, that's the only payback we require.
Want to get live push notification alerts whenever a company you follow releases an RNS? Find out more at voxmarkets.co.uk/app.
And joining me on the podcast right now, live from Cannes, you're going to London to LA or California and back, and then back to Cannes, James Draper, CEO of Bidstack. You're right, fella, you must be a bit jet-lagged, didn't you?
I am very jet-lagged, yes, but it's an absolute pleasure to join, and apologies for not joining you last week, like I said I would do.
Yeah, well, the thing is, that's what this podcast is going to be like. We're doing a sort of E3 update from Cannes, yes. Now, so because, you know, we initially were going to do a call just to catch up with the atmosphere out there and all that stuff, but it turns out, like you said, before you went, you had about 20 meetings scheduled. It now turns out you've done how many?
Over 50. Wow. Over 50 meetings, yeah, and it was. I'll tell you what, it was a great, decision to take so many of the team out there, because we could actually sort of divide and conquer a little bit. So, it was a phenomenal show for us. It was extremely, on all different points. I'll try and give you as much as I can. I was saying, you know, it's difficult for me to give away too much, because the commercial sensitivity of the information that we have been exposed to, and what we are in the middle of with various different parties at the moment. But I'll try my best.
I was going to say,
incriminate myself.
Yeah, I was going to say, it's not a lot you can reveal. So I said to people, I said, listen, James can't come on the podcast and talk about anything significant unless they release it via an official RNS. So yes. all it's about was talking about how it's going, the atmosphere there. So what can you say? The general feel of gaming at the moment, it feels like E3, I don't know if I've never noticed this before, but I didn't notice E3 featuring on mainstream television before until this year, and it seems like it's getting a lot more attention.
Yeah, it is the big sort of show and tell event. Last year and the year before, it's got some fairly decent sort of coverage, but it's this year, and particularly now that Google have chucked their hat into the gaming ring, and there's ours as well, and it's what's the ramification going to be for the likes of the console hardware situation. Is that going to continue? What's going on? What was Microsoft going to announce? It's generated an awful lot of intrigue, and it's a lot of divisive opinions. I can tell you that for one thing, depending on who you end up talking to out there. Some people are very much for cloud gaming, some people are skeptical about it. It's very interesting sort of getting different people's opinions, and as always, the opinions are normally based around these companies' sort of position and what their companies are set out to do. But it was extremely interesting from a gamer sort of perspective to sort of turn up there and sort of see what was going on. But in terms of what it was for us, what it meant for Bidstack, I said this on the LinkedIn post I put up this morning when I was flying out here. It was one of the most incredible weeks of my time at Bidstack, and it's going to sound rampy, so I can't really sort of, I don't know, you know, I can't win really, but it's in terms of what what it meant for us in terms of anything from validating a few things, opening up face-to-face discussions with a few parties that we hadn't yet done so, opening up opportunities for the business in terms of commercial execution from both platform, new game titles, big studios, small studios, getting a good feel for what certain parties are up to. We have an idea of what certain competitors are up to, and we feel more comfortable than ever. And it's been really, really interesting. And I tell you, probably the best way I would summarize it is that even at GDC, you know, when Fran and I went along there, it felt a little bit like we were still on the edge of the industry slightly, if that makes sense. It felt like we were sort of slightly outsiders, but we were able to add value, but we were still outsiders to it. One thing I've actually not mentioned before is we've got a head of games acquisition into the company now. So this guy is extremely well connected and has been walking us into... He was personally responsible for over 30 of the meetings there. And it was back to back. It was first thing in the morning, all the way through till, 5 a.m. Most days. And it was the extremes of dealing with top C-level people within the biggest games companies, game publishers in the world, down to sort of very exciting, interesting commercial opportunities that sort of came up. And actually, there's one more thing sort of worth mentioning to that. It was just about the fact that we were getting passed around by the gaming industry folk. So you imagine, as I said before, what we're doing here, what we're doing as a business, we're having to bring two very, very different worlds together. Mm-hmm. And the guys who end up creating video games and the guys who end up working in media agencies are pretty much separated from almost birth, right? So they end up going off in separate social groups, going off and doing completely separate careers. And we're trying to bring those two worlds together because both of them could do with one another, need one another. But it's fair to say that both are doing okay without one another. So we found that by bringing ad tech into the video game space, it could be met with a bit of skepticism. It probably was even like a couple of years ago when we first started talking to people. But now, due to the advisors as well we brought on, Wilkosoy was sensational out there. Like there's a hotel next to the conference center called the Marriott, like the JW Marriott there. And it's pretty much, it's where everyone meets and mingles during the course of the day. Most people don't even actually go into the conference center itself. It's got a who's who of the gaming industry there. And Will was just getting dragged into meetings left, right and center. So was our new game acquisition guy, Jamie. And also John Epstein was fantastic as well. Really, really good at setting up some good meetings. So I think it's the feeling that we feel part of it now. We were getting invited out all the time to various different things, invited into very interesting commercial discussions that could be anything from joint ventures and more. And it was amazing. It was absolutely amazing. And it was good for us to get some face-to-face time with some platforms that we've not actually met yet. And fair to say that I outlined what I felt could be possible with those type of platforms. And it's fair to say, and I don't think it would ever sort of come back on me by saying so, some of the ideas that Bidstack have had for those platforms hadn't been considered yet. and as such, that has led to feedback of the likes of saying that we are one of the most interesting strategic partnerships that they are looking at, which could go a whole number of ways, right? So it's fair to say that we are locked down under multiple NDAs, and I know that the very, very supportive investment community want to hear what they are, but I can't share anything more until things are signed, and certain things won't be signed until until it makes sense for the other party to do so. It's fair to say that we would love to get certain things signed up sooner, certain things we can wait on, but we've just got to do things in an order that works for all parties. But I can promise you this, that there was not one meeting that was bad. There was not one meeting that was even average. Every single meeting we had was extremely interesting. I would say that maybe there's one or two publishers we met that, one in particular, where their current games list isn't quite appropriate to what we do. That was what you would class as the worst meeting we had of the show. The rest of them, it was a case of when we discussed the different products we can do and the product pipeline we have, and we shared as much as we could do with these guys. It's fair to say that the interest level was far greater than I would have expected, and definitely sitting alongside a Will Kosoy in a couple of these meetings and the gravitas he brought and the confidence he brought to these C-level executives of massive, massive gaming publishers helped. This game acquisition guy and his ability to make these game developers feel good about themselves, the way he was with them, made my job a lot easier, made Fran's job a lot easier out there when he was discussing the technical side. And some of the meetings, they'll say, the ones that we've been talking to over the phone from here in the UK and discussing things over email, we got some proper face-to-face time with some very significant people. And it's fair to say that those are relationships that I feel personally will develop very strongly over the course of the year.
Yeah, and so from that, of course, I mean, you said there's some there you're hoping will happen. Are there any commercial deals that are almost positive is going to happen, or that has come from about a meeting there in E3?
Yes, mm-hmm. Yes. In short, yeah. I mean, there. It's all about the negotiation, right? There are some old school people in the industry that want a certain type of deal structure, so we're having to, which we could do today. But it's fair to say that we don't want to get into the bad habit of doing bad deals just to appease the market. That would be very, 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 very short-sighted. It's fair to say that there are, you know, I've just got to be so careful, right? But it's fair to say that there are opportunities available to us that before going to E3, we were not aware that they would be available to us. They are if and it, like, people just gotta bear in mind that it's anything can happen. However, I would say, hand on heart, speaking as truthfully as I would do about anything, it is fair to say that I can see one or two things which could change the face of Bidstack that are really, really interesting, but they are fairly embryonic because it was first face-to-face meeting time. There's a bunch of different things that need to happen. They need to happen in a certain order. We need to continue doing what we're doing in a certain order. I say, like, the first half of this year is getting our stuff together, building out the team, getting everything ready for scale. Q3 is about sort of the finalizing the execution points, and there should be some interesting bits and pieces that we better talk about then. And then Q4 is really sort of everything's up and running, and we're absolutely going for it. So our timelines match with the timelines of certain potential partners and when their platforms, etc., go live. So imagine that we're working in a structured fashion. I would love to tell you more of what we have in store and what we've been discussing, because it was genuinely exciting. And I promise you, once it's been disclosed, I will tell you. You have to remind me as well, and I'm sure certain investors will remind me, you know, but I will share what those conversations were about. But it was great. I would put it great brain food. And actually, I tell you, I said about the fact that we'd locked down our advisory board for now, but we met we met one or two people there who were, I mean, I think I met the most impressive person I've ever come across in terms of technical intelligence. It was just this one guy was just absolutely ridiculous. We ran through our sort of address and put up roadmap, and we probably shortcut various different technical situations that probably would have taken us on our own a couple of months in one lunchtime. So it was amazing. It was the quality of people out there was just genuinely breathtaking, and the opportunity for us is enormous. It's fair to say that the gaming industry as a whole is hugely enthusiastic about what we're doing. We know where we differentiate from any potential competitor. We know what people like about us compared to anyone else. We've just got to continue going down that route. And I say, we're going to work to our plan over the next few weeks and months. It's having a very logical order. We're basically having to do condense 3 years worth of work into 1 year to enable us to really sort of capitalize on where the market's going. So it is all hands on deck. But I tell you one thing, taking the guys out there to E3 to see it, to feel it, to understand the industry, meet people there that of real significance, I think it was very much the right decision, because I think everyone within the UK office now is completely can see the big win, and that is super important, because it's all very well and good me coming on here and like saying how big we could become, and you know your support is obviously always appreciated, and then we've got some really loyal investors to it, but to actually be there and see it and meet the people and see how accessible it all is and see what is potentially ahead of us if we execute, and we are executing in the right way. I can tell you that we are executing in the right order, that when you run through it with a large game publisher, how we're executing, how we're planning on getting the scale, that order of things in which we're doing things is well received. It's very, very well received, and it puts certain platform owners at ease. So we feel in a better shape than ever before. Now I'm over here in Cannes to go and meet a bunch of interesting media folk and stand around and discuss what we're up to with these guys out here. Again, we've got some very interesting people who are from our advisory board who have done a great job of setting up some fantastic meetings. We're balancing both sides now, but it's really sort of go time. So I know that Fran is back in the office in the UK, really sort of just putting some real, real intensity and pace into that development pipeline as well, which is great. It's really exciting, and all I can say is that the jet lag was worth it.
Yeah. And what we didn't mention, we touched on, obviously, when you were there originally at E3, or just before, it was good news, isn't it, that FM19 and Grid's now on Google Stadia.
Yes, it is. It is. Imagine that we would...
See, you're picking your words carefully.
Yes, I've got... Certain platform owners.
I understand. You can't. I can say this.
It's so our agreements cover all platforms. Mm-hmm. Certain platform owners are very enthused about what we're doing. NDAs from those type of companies are extremely watertight. It's fair to say that there are the ones that obviously I've discussed before, like anything from like Stadia, etc., outwards, but there are other platforms as well which are bubbling away in the background, which haven't been made public yet, that are extremely interesting to us as well. And I say, like, when I say about the fact we now feel part of the gaming industry, we are now being given some pretty useful strategic insight over what is happening, what companies are up to, who's going to output what, when. But it's fair to say that as soon as we get given that information, we get contacted, under NDA we go, and we have to be sort of extremely sort of careful about what we say. But I can tell you this, is that there are discussions we've had face to face. We had them at the start of the show, before the show actually got underway on the Monday. We had a very long discussion with a platform owner. It was a very good discussion. We'll see what happens with it. But it's fair to say that over the course of the show, there was a platform owner that we continued discussing with. The trouble with me even saying this is that I know that it's going to then get everyone very excited and start sharing stuff and speculating what I'm talking about. But it's fair to say that there are things that we can bring to the table that fit certain platform owners' core business. Then there's the other side, the ad console element to it, for example, can bring certain data to certain other platform owners that they hadn't been able to access before from the media world, which enables them to value what they have, their audience, etc., outside of the data sets which they've only had available to them to date. So there are a number of ways that we are able to add to the industry, which are extremely interesting. So we've been talking to certain platform owners about first party studios. There are some big publishers that you would imagine that we had some really good FaceTime with. And one of the things that I was quite interested to try and find was the next wave of publishers, who's emerging with what type of content, who's doing what's in the pipeline. Because I say with E3 is high fidelity gaming. Mm-hmm. You find the mobile gaming community is quite snobbish towards it. Mm-hmm. They don't appear on any sort of scale there. It's more Gamescom at the end of the year and Pocket Gamer and things like that. That's more the mobile side. It's almost like you look at it, it's got two industries within one industry, if that makes sense. The mobile industry do not really hang around with the high fidelity industry. So E3 is all about high fidelity. But there were some, and the way which I see the things like the cloud gaming platform is that it's almost like you could be a third sort of wheel to it. So you've got high fidelity console, PC, you've got mobile titles, which is pure casual. And what cloud gaming could become is a third element where the game mechanics are non-existent in any title that's out there at the moment, due to the way in which the cloud element of it enables, I don't know, different variants of gameplay which haven't existed to date in terms of 20,000 people, 50,000 people being in a game environment, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. That's just doesn't exist. So we've been trying to sort of find out and work out who's going to be doing what with that type of technology that's available, and trying to work out the keen eager beavers who might be floating around getting ideas there. So, and I feel we've done a pretty good job with that.
Yeah, absolutely. And do you know what? I had a joke on the weekend podcast. I said to a friend of mine, I said, I guarantee there'll be news out soon. And he said, we can't guarantee that. I said, well, no, I can't. But I said, I think it's likely to be news out within a month. And I say, I pretty much guarantee that. Would you say that's an accurate forecast? Within a month, you'll have news out?
Yes.
But you haven't mentioned the guy. You've not mentioned that. Is it James or Jamie? You just mentioned is James, the games guy you've hired.
Yes.
Who's that guy then?
Yes, he's a video game corporate development guy. He's been in around. He did some stuff with Wargaming. He did some stuff with Jagex before. He's a character. He is an absolute character. I really like him. He's very American. He's very, very sort of confident, but makes game developers feel extremely loved. And he's got very, very good people skills. So he has been wonderful for us in terms of the meetings that we've had in E3. And actually, he's in his element when he's in an informal environment. He's absolutely in his element. He's amazing. So he's been able to move the needle for us in terms of relationships we've built over the last few days and weeks. So yeah, he's been marvelous. But in terms of additional news, there will be stuff. You know, it's there will be some. I don't want to be accused of being rampy, right? So, but it's fair to say that there are a lot of things going on, as you would expect, because I'm saying we're having to try and condense 3 years worth of stuff or building blocks into 1 year. Mm-hmm. So as you would expect, if we're building something which has to scale quickly, particularly over Q4, scale rapidly, there will be a lot of stuff coming out in Q3, I would imagine. So yes, there's a bunch of things.
Yeah. So I mean, you are now. You've done a lot, you know, in a sort of a year almost, and your ticker, your name is well recognised in the small cap investor space in the UK. Now, as far as now, the bigger pond kind of thing of the game developers and ad tech and all that. I mean, are you sort of getting? And you sort of mentioned it, but I mean, do most sort of guys in that area know you now? You exist?
Yes. And I think it's fair to say when we floated up in September, they didn't really. I mean, they had we had a few sort of preliminary discussions, etc. But I cannot tell you enough. Like it was brilliant how word got around at the show about us. Mm-hmm. The right people within that industry, and it's quite a small industry actually in terms of the key personnel, the real decision makers. It's quite small on high fidelity side. So once you get in with 10 of, say, for example, 100 people that really matter in that industry, word starts getting around. So by the end of the show, word had already got around about us, and people were requesting meetings and wanting to meet up with us. And there was a real warmth towards us. Mm-hmm. Because I think people remember with fondness what Massive and that were trying to do. Massive, Double Fusion, IGA. They remember John Epstein and what he was doing. So they like the fact he's associated with us. They like the way we're trying to tackle things. Like the way that we are tackling it in a way which is methodical and linked to real scale. And the only way to do that is to create this new ad category. It's the only way it works. If you try and skip that part, it will just be manual. And it has to be, for real scale, it has to be automated. But it's fair to say that a CRO, Chief Revenue Officer, like the guy who reports directly into the CEO of one of the biggest game publishers in the world, mentioned to me about the fact that he's been following our share price and been listening to these podcasts, hence why I'm having to be relatively careful about what I say, because he's probably listening. So yeah, it's been really great that people have shown so much interest in it. And if it's, I think I've always said this, if we crack it, our existence actually helps everyone. It gets more content to market. It's an extra revenue stream for the big guys, the small guys, and it gives an extra string to the bow of the ad agencies in the world. So that's what I'm going around talking to people about over the course of this event over here, is getting people excited about this net new ad category. Mm-hmm. But it has to be dealt with in a certain manner for the agencies to be able to really sort of get properly excited about this type of stuff. Luckily, they are getting excited, but it's gonna, I don't know, I'll spike a few drinks and then get out some paperwork, get people to sign a few things over, it'll be fine.
yeah. Well, listen, James, listen, you said a lot without saying a lot, which is quite good, I think, and it's quite a skill in itself. But for people listening who like the sound of this, but they're still not following the story yet, but they're sort of getting it, give them three quick reasons why
you love these three reasons.
Yeah,
don't
I do.
You love it.
It sort of summarises it, you know, and also it's easy to tweet out. Three reasons why someone should hit that follow button on your page and add you to their watch list, please.
Well, over the next little while, I will be able to stop going around the subject like I am right now, and I should better start disclosing some of these bits and pieces. That's point one. That'll be a lot more fun for me. I'll tell you that for one thing. Point two, again, there are more platforms coming to market soon, and they are significant companies. So it'll be interesting to see what they come up with. And point three, on top of that, it's Q3 is going to be our super busy period here. So if you'd imagine that we are going to be able to start talking a lot more about our plans for the next few years by in the next 2, 3, 4 months, we'll be able to disclose an awful lot. So I would keep an eye on it, even if you've got a slight interest in gaming, even if not invested in us. I think it's an interesting journey. So yeah, I would say that.
Marvellous stuff, James. Good to chat to you, and no doubt we'll be catching up again in the not-too-distant future. Thanks very much, fella.
Absolutely, no problem.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is David Ciclatera, Executive Chairman of Live Company Group. LVCG is a ticker. David, thanks for joining me.
Thank you very much. It's good evening here from Seoul. Nice weather here. How's the weather? Still raining back in the UK?
Well, do you know what? We've had a temporary reprieve from the dreadful weather last week. I mean, and, you know, hopefully, but apparently it's going to be tipping down again, storms coming, and hopefully we'll break through then into summer, but summer really hasn't started yet. But it's quite appropriate.
Come on, it's Wimbledon, it's the Open Championship, it's weather time, really.
Yeah, exactly. So listen, you're in the Far East, quite appropriate, your news out, Brick Live Animal Paradise Tour in Japan. It seems like there's not enough days in the week for the amount of shows you're opening up, but take us through this one, David. What's happening here?
Well, I might have said this to you before. Japan has been an early adopter of Brick Live. We're running 8 shows there. We have a relatively small but talented agency who's our partner in Japan. And I think this is a very important announcement because for the first time in 2 years of working, they've had requests to up their game, if you like. So the bringing of a tour to Japan, obviously it's costed money, it's got sponsorship behind it, et cetera, et cetera. In Japan, what happens is that they're slow adopters, but once they get started, there's no stopping them. And I think this is very exciting for our Japanese partner. It's very exciting for us. And we're already talking about stuff we can do in 2020. Remember, the Olympics is in Japan in 2020. And it's just one of those things. Everybody forgets the strength of Japan. It's like a United States. It's like a Germany, UK combined. It's a very strong economy. I'm personally delighted because Kaz, our partner, has put in a huge amount of effort, a huge amount of belief into Brick Live. And I think this is a great step for him and for the company.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, I've got to say, let me touch you. You were on last week talking about your final results. And we mentioned a broken note, and I've had a couple of people mention me, saying they can't get hold of the broken note, and because you said it'd be available. So I think we're going to put that up somewhere, maybe on Vox, so people will see that, because I think it really showed.
Well, that would be great.
Yeah, because do you know what, David?
I
was going to say, it really shows. There's an excellent graph on there, just the amount of events. Now, the thing with final results is this. They do give a sort of, you know, a guide as to where what's been happening, but it's very historical. Like I said, we're now 6 months out of date, pretty much, from what you've been doing. That was last year. And you've been on the podcast quite a few times, talking about all the events coming up. And you've done many, many this year. So, and I always say to people, it's worth looking back at financial results for a growing company, but you're not fully researched unless you've listened to the last podcast or done the last presentation, because that tells where a company's, you know, is going, and that's what the share price is about, isn't it? So it's always good to look at the final results, but they're out of date. And so I think this broker note looks into the future, which is more relevant, isn't it?
It is, and I think it's what's important is that the broker note is the first time that anybody's put any numbers relating to this company into the market. And obviously, those notes are out, those numbers are, we would hope to see them as conservative. But the reality is, yes, it shows you where we think we're going to be going over the next 3 years. I think the note sets out the strategy of what we're trying to achieve. It talks about our new relationship with Nickelodeon and other IP potentials that we have. I found it quite a thorough note. Obviously, we don't write it. It's written by somebody else. He spent a lot of time with the company understanding what we do. And I'm delighted that you found it useful.
Yeah, well, do you know what? I mean, obviously, it's an estimate, but looking at the sheer amount of growth in the amount of events is very good, and you're going to be profitable this year, and that's growing, of course. But also, not only that, there's things you've done that, that could open up a lot more potential, and it's just a start. Like, and one thing they said is that the hookup with Nickelodeon, the brand deal you've done, how easy that can be rolled out, and the potential value creation there, you know?
Yeah, well, I think, you know, take a country like Japan. Japan has always been about brands and international brands. And so, you just think this through. And as I said, BritLive, new brand, we own what we have, etc. To be recognized by a $25 billion company like Viacom, I know it's not them personally, but they're subsidiary has said, you know, we want to do business with these people. That to me was a huge step. The step we've taken in Japan today is a huge step, and I'm sure going forward there'll be further steps that we're going to take. In terms of value for the company, I mean, again, the broker tries to address that. I'm a significant shareholder, and now our accounts are out. I certainly will be looking, I think, to buy some more shares.
Yeah, absolutely. Marvellous stuff. Well, David, like I said, it's almost, you should be a co-host, I think, on this podcast. Last couple of weeks is getting busier and busier for you. And
but you always, you kind of got, let's be honest, we've spoken quite a lot. We've never met, but I think you've understood what we're about. We're about growing a brand, about growing something that's exciting in a very exciting area, which is education and entertainment for kids. And I think what we have and what we're doing is quite unique. And, being on a public market is not always the easiest thing all the time. But I've been a great believer in what we've built and what we're building. And as you said, there's a lot of growth to come. And I'm sure that we'll be speaking quite a few times again in the not too distant future.
Excellent stuff. Yeah, my words exactly. And speak soon. Thanks, David.
Thank you. Bye.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Gil Holzman, CEO and President of Eco Atlantic Oil and Gas. ECO is ticker there. Gil, thanks for joining me.
Good morning, Justin. Thank you for having me.
And I've got to say, you've got a massive, significant date approaching soon. And it's approaching as quickly as the Stena IV drill ship is approaching that prospect. And in fact, you released this last week. We'll get into the detail of this in a bit. Before we do, as always, if someone's new or not familiar with the company, new to the podcast as well, could you just summarize what you're all about at Eco Atlantic Oil and Gas, please?
Yeah, Eco Atlantic Oil and Gas is an oil and gas exploration company with few licenses offshore Namibia and offshore Guyana, the highest prospectivity in the exploration world today. We partner with the world's best and biggest, with Tullow Oil and with Total, in our block in Guyana, which is subject to be drilled immediately in 2 weeks from now. In Namibia, offshore Namibia, we have four offshore blocks in the Wallabies Basin, right next to Exxon, Galp, Total and Shell, who are also gearing up for a drilling campaign later this year.
Yeah, absolutely. So you reckon this is going to be drilled when then, Gil?
As we speak today, Tuesday, the Stena IV drilling ship is crossing the Atlantic from West Africa to Guyana territorial waters. I think it's now somewhere midway, and it is expected to arrive to Orinduik block offshore Guyana on and around the 25th of June, so in, let's say, 9 days from now, something like that. And then shortly after, we will start, we will spot the first well, the first prospect on the Orinduik block, which is the Jethro lobe. Mm-hmm. This should take 30, 35 days up to 40 days. And immediately after, we're going to spot yet another well, the Joe prospect. So two wells in the next 2 months, starting in 2 weeks from now.
And it's also worth noting, and very important actually, you know, you're fully funded for this, yeah?
Not only for this. Whatever the outcome is, we are fully funded for at least additional 6 wells, altogether 8 wells offshore Guyana. That is a result of our deal that we made with Total when they farmed into our block, and they paid us in advance a worth of three wells at our 15% working interest, and we recently accomplished another fundraise of around $17 million in April. That leaves us with around $35 million with each well. On average, will cost us around $4-$4.5 million. So that leaves us with at least 8 wells to be drilled in this block in the next 2 years. We have more than 15 prospects identified. The smallest one is 150 to 200 million barrels. The biggest one is 600 million barrels. And in total, there should be around 4 billion barrels on the Rindwick block. So we are fully funded for the next 2 years drilling campaign, regardless what will be the results in the first 2 wells that we are targeting in 2 weeks.
Excellent stuff. And I suggest people who are interested to Google the Stena Forth drill ship, because it's a bit of a beast. It's got even got a helipad on it. It's a hell of a unit, isn't it?
It's a big one, actually. It's one of the biggest drill ships out there. It's fully equipped and staffed with the Talo drilling team. They were drilling offshore West Africa in Ghana, and we took a side contract with them, and we moved it to Guyana. So the rig is actually it's a hot rig, meaning it's operational, and therefore the train and run up time will be minimal, and the crew is very experienced. They were drilling in the past few months offshore West Africa, so it's I foresee a smooth operation, and we're just waiting for it to arrive to the exact location, as I said, in 9-10 days maximum.
Yeah, exactly. Well, it's end of next week, I suppose. So
we are targeting the 26th of June.
Midweek. Okay, cool. So next week. So let's talk about the potential here then. What's the potential?
So according to a CPR that was published by a third party, independent third party, recently, we look at the first target, which was unanimously selected by Total, Talo and ourselves. This is the Jethro Lobe. It's not a huge one. It's up to 250 million barrels, but it has the potential to open a whole new complex of prospects that lies surrounding the Jethro Lobe. This one, as I said, is 250 million barrels at around 43% chance of success, according to the geological calculation done by the CPR. Talos and Total numbers are not materially different than ours. The Joe prospect, again, it's a standalone, relatively small prospect, only 150 million barrels, if one could call it small. But again, it has the same high 43% chance of success. Again, it looks like a very distinct and a bright spot kind of a prospect. So we're going to start with these two. Jethro itself, Jethro Lobe, we're going to drill it with a wider diameter, and we're going to case it going down. So we're going to drill it as a keeper. And if hopefully it is a discovery, I think that the common thinking between the staff at Talo and Total and ourselves is that could be a subject for a fast track development target with thinking that this one could potentially produce end of 2022, beginning of 2023. So all the teams, ours and Total and Talo, are very much hopeful for us to be able to come up with the first discovery and to turn the Rindwick block from a very high prospectivity exploration block to a producing block for the benefit of our stakeholders and the Guyanese people.
Yeah. What's your feelings at the moment? When you think about this, do you have a nervous excitement about it?
I try not to think about it, let me be honest. At the end of the day, as a company, and to our stakeholders and shareholders, we did everything in our power to make sure that we create value to our shareholders. We made sure that we live up to all our promises to investors and shareholders, and we made sure that we are coming to the final stage of actually drilling the very highly prospective Rindwick block in a full fund manner with the best partners that we could have. as of next week, when we spot the first whale, it's no longer in our hands as management. It's in the hands of Neptune and the gods of the sea and the gods of the oil. And I really hope that they will be favorable to us.
Mm-hmm. Marvelous stuff. Okay. Well, one final thing, Gil. If someone's listening to this, likes the sound of what you're talking about and the progress you're making there, but are not yet following the story, give them those three quick reasons why they should hit that follow button on your page on Vox and add you to their watch list, please.
No, we are actually at the stage where that every small exploration company wants to be. We are actually going to spud two highly prospective, high-impact wells in the most exciting oil province in the world right now. We have two wells to be drilled in the next 2 months. Each discovery will be transformational for us, for as a company, for our shareholders, even for Tullow. So there's a lot to look up to. Two wells, quite big chances of success. Hopefully, we will discover oil in one or both. And in any case, we're gonna keep on exploring Orindwik next week. We are fully funded, and together with our partners, we have no doubt that the hydrocarbon is there on our block. We could actually see it. We just need to make sure that we target the right prospects in order to prove the way.
Marvelous stuff. Gil, good to chat to you. And hopefully we'll be catching up in the not-too-distant future. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Justin.
Okay, it's time for the top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours. They are at five. Ethinity Networks, or Ethinity, Ether, Ethinity. Yeah, they're up by 21% a day. I don't have a good others, actually, but they're into Ether Networks and all that stuff in China. They're from Israel. ENET. I don't know, China and Israel, the combination and the tech, I don't really understand. Not for me, thanks. At four, Rehoboth Resources, RBD. At three, SafeStay, SSTY. Check out my video. Just do a search for YouTube, Justin Wait, SafeStay. It'll come up. And I've done an article on those a couple of days ago. I do videos Wednesdays and Sundays. At two, Union Jack Oil, UJO. And number one, most followed company, Agronomics, ANIC. I also cover that in that video. Just do that to a search. It'll be in the same video there. Listen, if you're going to go to YouTube, all right, hit the subscribe button. Don't forget the bell. Oh, so many people forget the bell. They think it's irrelevant. The bell's not irrelevant. It's more relevant than the notification or the subscribe, you know, because it just tells you when a video goes up. It's quite handy. Don't forget the bell there. Hit the bell. Okay. Top five most liked RNSs are as follows. Alba Mineral Resources, project and investment update. At four, Ashtead Group, final results. At three, Live Company Group, David Secretira there, buying more stock. At two, Rehoboth Resources. I'm going to sneeze. Operations update at Lexia Mia One Romania. And number one, most liked RNS came from Hurricane Energy, operational update. That's it for the podcast. Thanks for listening. Don't forget, like I said, there's not much in life that's free apart from the Vox Markets app. If it gives you value, give us a bit of payback by just giving us a nice rating and review at your app store. Thank you very much. Much appreciated.
The Vox Markets podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.